My name is Victoria Matei.
My name is Olga Araceli.
And we are both undocumented women of color.
I miss the Caleb doing the intro.
Oh my gosh, it was a good intro, but I also like our music, which by the way is done by one of Caleb's like old-time friends, so mm-hmm. super cool.
Yeah, I like that it's unique too. So
yeah, and it's linked on our show notes if you want to check out his Instagram. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, welcome back. We are so glad to be here, and the sun is still out, which is exciting.
It's amazing, yeah, because it's almost 7 p.m. and it's sunny.
I know.
I've missed this so much.
Yeah, me too. I've been waiting for this. I remember somebody saying that, like, oh, after winter solstice, like, it just gets lighter every day. And I was like, that's true. And I have been, like, noticing the days and just waiting. Waiting for spring and summertime. Yeah.
I feel the same way. So, in the midst of the sun being back, our check-in question today is, what are you looking forward to for spring or summer?
Mm-hmm. I think I'm mostly excited to definitely have those nice, like, warm days back. I'm going to try to do a lot of more outdoorsy stuff. So, either hiking or bicycling. Going to try to finish learning how to swim.
We started in Miami.
Yeah, and I did not know how to swim. I mean, I could swim to save my life, but that's about it. But then in Miami, I learned how to float on my back and just trust myself that way. And so now I have to the other way, I guess. I don't know.
So more outdoorsy things. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, I think because we're so deprived of sun in Washington, it's just like when the sun's out, you have to be outside.
Yeah, it'd be a waste to not
be outside. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But also, if that's not your scene, that's fine too. I know a friend who's allergic to the sun. If that, I don't know how that makes sense, but yeah, I wouldn't want her to be out there if it makes her miserable.
Yeah, true that. So I think what I'm most looking forward to is Bellingham is one of the most beautiful places, and when it's like sunny and the sun is setting and there's just people like all up on their rooftops just like drinking beer, playing music, hanging out, and just like everybody's like trying to be more social and like just be more communal of things. And like I remember so I have like this group of friends that do weekly potlucks and have for like 4 years, and so like they're the best when it's spring, right? Because yeah. everybody wants to get together and just grill and eat and just have a really good time.
Yeah,
so that's what I'm most looking forward to.
And Bellingham, like, that's what sold me here was the sunset, especially from but what's the park name? I forgot.
Man, you didn't even Boulevard know where you were
park.
Buying
I know Boulevard Park. There you go. It was amazing. I was like, I have to go here because I really needed to see that sunset.
I know, and we're right next to the like Puget Sound area, so like what feeds into the Pacific Ocean, and it is just so healing to be next to the water. Right.
Yeah,
that's what sold me, is all of that. Oh, so good. So I did want to do, oh my gosh,
you're a mess. Vicky's a mess right now, everybody.
Anyway, Bad Bunny fucked me up last night. So I wanted to do kind of a little bit of an extensive check-in because I did just come back from being in McAllen, Texas, and Brownsville, Texas, where was the next destination for the fellowship retreat, the Dream Lead Institute. And it was a really, you know, special trip because it was the first time that many of us had seen the border. And so that was a whole experience on its own. But I was there for a week and I had a really good time. I think, you know, one of the first days that I was there and I got to go to the border, it was kind of like I was going with my friend and I was going to work with him. So he was like showing like a bunch of high schoolers, like just like information about the border and just kind of like giving them facts and just like giving them the space to kind of understand this man-made wall.
Yeah.
And so I was like kind of like hiding in the back a little bit, you know, because I wasn't really a part of the group, but I was trying to process it. And we were at this like beautiful old park, and there was just like all these trees and like all this like music from the birds, right? Like it was just like so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was just this wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt so, it was so
natural.
Yeah. And there was like a helicopter like circling the group.
Mm.
It just like in circles over and over again. And it was just, you know, I don't know. But like overall, the trip like brought like a lot of emotions up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like for a lot of people, it was like anger.
Mm-hmm.
Like not really like like being able to understand why that wall is there, and not really being able to understand like why we can't go home or mm-hmm. or come back, etc.
Mm-hmm.
There was also, of course, like a lot of like trying to understand, and also because like I said, a lot of us have never been down there,
mm-hmm.
so things are different. You know, there's like checkpoints, etc. And right here where we live in Washington, like, we don't have that.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying to understand certain things. And I think a lot of, you know, even though it was like a really emotional like trip,
mm-hmm.
and there was a lot of crying, I think it was also really healing for a lot of us. Cause at one point, when we were all together as a fellowship, mm-hmm. we were as a cohort or whatever, we were all at this place called Alice Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it wasn't, you know, it feels weird saying that, you know, the other park was beautiful, but I mean, it really was. But we were at this park and we were like having a healing circle and like just holding hands and just like kind of breathing through our emotions and mm-hmm. processing. Cause a lot of people experience some traumatic shit there. Like people remember like physically crossing. People remember so many things, right?
Yeah.
And traumatic experiences. So I think there was a lot of room for us to heal and breathe. And it was really powerful. Like, just to all know that we have gotten so far together and mm-hmm. we were there. And something someone said was like, I was so scared to come here and I was scared to fly into the McAllen airport.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I got there, I saw families and like children and everybody just like super excited to mm-hmm. like greet their families. Right. And it's a tiny airport. So mm-hmm. like, you know, so it kind of, you know, I was thinking a lot about a lot of the rhetoric behind border cities and mm-hmm. things. And that is today's topic, will be kind of, you know, the northern border and the southern border.
Mm-hmm.
But before we go into that, I quickly want to say some other stuff about the trip, just because it was so good. And I ate so much good food. It was always a fucking desmadre. Like, we always love going out drinking and, like, barely getting any fucking sleep. Like, I think there were some nights that I slept, like, 3 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And still had, like, a full day of, like, training and stuff and being around people. And but it was, it's always such a good time when we get together.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blown away by the, like, party scene in McAllen, 17th Street. Like, it's fucked up. Like, like they closed down the street and everybody's fucking hammered just all over the damn place.
Wow.
And every place is packed and there's tons of music and it's all Latinos. Mm-hmm. Like, it was pretty amazing.
Wow.
I was a little overwhelmed at times, but I was also like, oh my gosh, I love this.
That sounds like my scene.
it was such a good scene. I was really happy to be there. You know, I didn't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it was really beautiful and had some beautiful conversations and mm-hmm. had a great fucking time. But, you know, it really did invoke a lot of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, one of the things that I was thinking about how we process emotions is, I mean, with other people, but also through art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really lucky to meet someone down there, Luis Corpus,
mm-hmm.
who does amazing art and essentially uses, like, the materials of the land at the border
mm-hmm.
to create these beautiful portraits.
Wow.
So I would definitely check them out on Instagram. Their Instagram is corpus080. Did I say that wrong?
No, you said that right.
Okay.
I was just like smiling because we're doing a plug.
I know, we're doing a plug. Okay, I'm going to restart that. I don't want that part in. So yeah, I would totally check their work out. It's corpus080 on Instagram. It's pretty sweet. And he was really cool, super down to earth. And he was kind of mm-hmm. teasing. He's like, I can't wait to hear all the shit you have to say about McAllen at the border.
Yeah.
And it was difficult. like, I think I felt a lot of anger, but also a lot of, like, healing and a lot of just questions, right? Like, my mind did not stop racing.
Yeah.
And one of the most beautiful things I saw were all these murals, right? That the community had come together to, like, express what they were feeling in their communities. There's a ton of, like, amazing organizing that has happened with farm workers, with immigrants, with, you know, and it was beautiful. You could see that. And the community was super beautiful. And I just, I loved it. We can't wait to go back and, like, kind of see more of it, because we did have long days and stuff, and we met some really awesome people too. But yeah, I'm still processing all of it, right? Like, it's not something that I can process all the time while it's happening. But
and you were there for a week too, so it's a lot.
It was a lot, but it was really good. And I'm really happy that that happened for all of us. But fuck, they get down in McAllen. So, like I was saying, our topic for the day is,
so it's border cities, and we're just going to discuss a little bit of the rhetoric behind, like, the northern and southern border, because I think when we think about borders, it's usually the southern border that comes up. And even now, like, we were trying to look for information and statistics and data, and even if we put in, like,
northern border
in Google, like, it all took us to the southern border. Even if I Googled, like, bordered cities, it didn't give me any of the northern, like, cities up here by the Canadian border. So,
and that was interesting how there's such a large focus on that when the other border is almost twice as long, and still we don't talk about that, because I mean, the way I see it is because Canadian folks are white.
Yeah. A colorism, racism has to do a lot with that. And I think, you know, legality in general, and who's deserving of it. But
yeah. And since we've lived in Bellingham, we live 30 minutes from the Canadian border. And you would think that being in Bellingham, you just feel, like, fairly safe. Like, I mean, there's some creepy things that happen in Bellingham, like in any college town. But everybody here kind of lives in this bubble, right? This, like, liberal bubble that everything is perfect, and
we all get along, and we, you know,
we care about community
and all this shit.
We all smoke weed at the park at sunset, like, all this shit, right? And it just has this huge, like, safety, like, I don't know. It just doesn't really feel like the border cities that Trump is talking about or his administration is talking about on the news, etc.
Yeah.
When they're saying there's a border crisis. All right, which border are you talking about? Clearly the southern one.
Yeah.
And what I learned while I was in McAllen, there is no border crisis. Like, what people kept saying was, like, this is a humanitarian crisis, very different. Like, very different. But people refuse to believe that, right? And, like, people, like, truly, like, believe the things that are coming out of Trump's mouth when he says that these border cities are dangerous and the crime rates are high and all of the above. So, what would you say are some of the things that we hear about the northern border?
I don't think, well, again, going back, we don't hear a lot, but
from experience, I guess we can talk about that. Like, we don't see Border Patrol a whole lot, but we still see them.
And I think, like, because they know that, like, it's not, I feel like they don't have as much work, you know, as unquote, versus, like, the southern border, they know what areas to target. And I'm thinking about, like, all the farms and where and, like, concrete companies and all that, that, like, we know Border Patrol, especially ICE, have targeted here in Bellingham. And so it's very direct and intentional work that they're doing.
Exactly. And when we were looking up stuff about Border Patrol, we were like, all right, let's look at some of the numbers. And it says that I wrote down where we got this information, and it's a Southern Border Communities Coalition, which will be linked on our show notes. But it was saying that 85 people since 2010 have died in Border Patrol custody. And that is mostly the southern border, right? That, mm-hmm. again, that militarization is being used at the southern border and not the northern border. Mm-hmm. And that's no secret. With, like, drones, with the high surveillance, with sending troops to the border. And something that, like, one of my friends said while we were down there was, like, well, the community was super scared when the, like, state troopers came to the border because those people are not trained to mm-hmm. work with asylum seekers or migrant folks. They're trained to kill people.
Yeah.
And that is their, essentially their purpose, right? To protect this country and kill people. And so, you know, the folks that have died in CBP custody, those are the ones that have been recorded.
Mm-hmm.
That's guaranteed not, you know, there's definitely a lot more
that
that's happened to. And that's not even counting the people that have died in, like, crossing or going back home or mm-hmm. whatever consequences are when they're deported. So, like, that number is so much higher.
Mm-hmm. And I really liked, I think we touched on it a couple episodes back, where we said it wasn't border deaths, it was border killings, because these are all, like, very intentional, and mm-hmm. the methods and forms that they use to basically, like, block our people from, you know, moving freely around the continent. So something that came up too is, like, all the women, the pregnant women that have been in custody and the miscarriages that they have had. So I don't think the 85 people or, you know, all of that is included in there, but it is definitely higher.
Mm-hmm.
And
the youngest being 7 and 8 years old, that mm-hmm. happened in 2018.
Yeah, that we just saw last year.
Mm-hmm. And so some of the other things that we learned about Border Patrol was just that since 2000, there's been over 150 cases of corruption. And so this is because there's very little accountability to Border mm-hmm. Patrol. There's, like, little oversight. They have way more power than they should. They have access to police records. If they have a 287G, they could literally, like, show up to court and take people. Like, you know, there's so much more and so many more layers to this mm-hmm. to why they're abusing this power.
Yeah. Adding to that, as we compare the southern and northern border, like, there's also, like, a limited number of checkpoints, or I don't even know if we know of any checkpoints up here that I've seen. I think it's just, like, usually when you hit the Canadian border and, like, they'll just check you up there. Nothing, like, in between.
Yeah, so I experienced my first checkpoint down in Texas, and it was mm-hmm. on our way from McAllen to San Antonio. And it was so weird because they pretty much block any, like, cell radius, so you, like, no longer have service on your phone.
Wow.
When you, like, pull up, they, like, weigh your car. There's cameras, like, facing at every angle of your car, seeing if your wheels are, like, you know, mm-hmm. too low or whatever, you know, they're just, like, monitoring everything. You see, like, a ton of people, like, in cars being pulled to the side,
mm-hmm.
And just, like, looking at them in and out. There's dogs there.
Mm.
It's just, like, again, very, like, high security. And they have this one thing that I won't forget is they had this giant bulletin board mm-hmm. and it had pictures of people mm-hmm. and they were all mostly men and all Latino men, and they had X's on them once they were caught or mm-hmm. found.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a bunch of other ones that hadn't been. And I guess why I won't forget that is because when I saw those X's on their faces, I didn't know what that meant.
Mm.
I didn't know if that meant that they were killed, that they were detained, that they were deported.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had no, like, actual description of what had happened, you know, mm-hmm. which I know it's, like, a quick glance.
Yeah.
But, like, when you're criminalizing people just by the way they look,
mm-hmm.
as soon as you get to one of those checkpoints, like, that is, again, adding another layer to why people racially profile people.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really hard, right? And yeah. like when we pulled up and the guy asked, because we were in a university van,
mm-hmm.
he asked how many people are in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And there was 9 of us. So we said 9. He looked at the car and then I was like, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But normally he would say, are you a U.S. citizen?
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, no, it was a really weird experience. But like again, when if you want to compare North and South, like there's no checkpoints up here mm-hmm. that we've experienced in Washington.
Yeah. And I've gone pretty up north, up to like Blaine. And I think that's very, very close, like almost hitting the border. And that was like the first time that I came up here to Bellingham and just to see the city, see the school, and like kind of see where I was going to throw myself in. And I remember the person who was showing me, like, at that point I was going to get a little, like, studio, and showing me the studio, and then for one thing or another, I couldn't end up going home to Tacoma, and back then I didn't drive, so I had to spend the night, and luckily this person had, like, other apartments and stuff, and he had one empty, and he was very generous, and he's like, you can stay up here, but it's, like, also really close, it's up north, kind of close to the Canadian border. And when he said that, like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I can't go that close, you know? Mm-hmm. But I was like, I don't have another choice either, because I didn't have a way home. And then, like, I didn't want to bring my parents, like, or call them, you know, to come get me, when I didn't want to put them in that risk either. So I just waited here until the next day to go home. I was riding the bus, I think.
Before we continue, I want to say some things that we also found in regards to the billions of taxpayer dollars that are spent on Border Patrol agents. Mm-hmm. Over 19,000 Border Patrol agents serve, like, you know, looking or overseeing or whatever the fuck, 700 plus miles of the wall, drones, you know, detention centers, like, I mean, all of this is what we're funding as taxpayers, right? Mm-hmm. And also, like, sending National Guard. That's also mm-hmm. very costly. So I think, you know, we invest so much in militarizing and creating this idea that we have to militarize the border. Mm-hmm. When realistically, these border cities are some of the safest cities in America.
Yeah. And there's tons of facts and statistics behind that, too.
And what's... Oh my gosh. So how we were kind of talking about Google earlier, how like
oh, yeah.
you look up like north, like you'll type in just northern border crime rates, and then it's all about the southern mm-hmm. border. But also, like, when I was looking at different sites, I went to an FBI one just out of curiosity to see what it had to say. Mm-hmm. And not even second sentence in, it's criminalizing the border. Mm-hmm. It is saying, like, the place where all these drug cartels smuggle drugs and mm-hmm. these murderers and this and that, like, immediately. Mm-hmm. So, like, these, you have, like, you know, when you're looking for these sources, you're yeah. reading, like, both angles of it. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, really fucked up. And
yeah. And if you don't know better, you'll
believe it.
You'll believe it. Yeah. But I think for us that know better, that even, like, two sentences in or, you know, whatever, we're like, no, you're wrong. But for other folks who were just learning about this topic, I could see why it's misleading.
Yeah, and also, like, something that we were learning at the fellowship this last week was, like, meeting people where they're at. Mm-hmm. And something that I won't forget is Sister Norma, who you need to look her up. She's amazing and has done a lot for asylum seekers, refugees, mm-hmm. undocumented communities. She was saying that she... You know, her whole, like, life is invested in this work. And ever since she was really young, she was saying that that's what she wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that there was this lady, I mean, this happens to her all the time, but this lady goes up to her and says, like, you know, that I don't agree with what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But Sister Norma met her where she was at and mm-hmm. invited her into the space and just showed her around. Mm-hmm. You know, like, having compassion for people and meeting them where they're at. Like, I was blown away by that, because I'm, like, totally the kind of person that, like, is, like...
blow them up.
Yeah, I'd be like, excuse me, get the fuck out. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care. But, like, that really opened my eyes to, like, meeting people...
Yeah.
Where they're at.
And that takes a lot of patience too, which I've noticed a lot of people don't have.
Including myself. She's giving me these eyes. And again, you know, like, there's a balance in that, because mm-hmm. there's no reason that we should be putting up with white supremacy and racism just mm-hmm. because some group of people believe that.
Yeah.
Or another subgroup of people, or mm-hmm. like, you know, like, I don't think that's right, but mm-hmm. I also... There's a balance, right, of meeting people where they're at yeah. to understand and learn from each other and having that compassion. And I admire Sister Norma for having mm-hmm. that patience and love and compassion for humanity.
Yeah.
Because that's what it means, right? When you are like
devoted
to humanity.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is where also like our allies can, you know, take a step forward and really like, you know, when we're like, get your people, like, this is it, you know, like if you understand and are willing to explain to your peers like what is wrong, I think you should take that, also meet them where they're at and not just have us do all that labor, because it's
draining. Yeah. And it's constant.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the fucking time.
Mm-hmm. But know when to do it, how to do it, because we don't need more people putting, you know, any negative rhetoric out there.
Exactly. I totally forgot where I was going from the beginning of all this because I just went on this huge rant. But we were kind of looking up like how long the northern border mm-hmm. is. Yeah. Do you want to read that number?
Yeah, and I have it. And this is from a CBS news article from last year. And it's 5,525 miles long. And it's the longest and busiest land boundary in the world.
Yeah, and comparing that to the 2,000 miles mm-hmm. at the southern border.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. It's double. So again, we need to question, like, who is building these narratives
mm-hmm.
of what is happening?
Mm-hmm.
And I had felt so safe the whole time that I was in Brownsville and McAllen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not a single time did I feel like I was in danger or... Mm-hmm. felt threatened by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very humbling community and a community that is ready to organize for their communities and people, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that a little bit later, but we're looking up some of the crime rates and trying to see what was up. And we were like, okay, let's look for some numbers. And the numbers all just like concluded the same thing, that border cities are safer.
Mm-hmm.
When it's more... I don't know. I don't even like that we have to say that because there's more police or more surveillance that it's safer for that reason, because I don't think that's fucking true.
No.
I think it's more community based.
Yeah.
Like, it's a more of a collective versus thinking, you know, it kind of like paints that picture in my head of like the American dream is having this beautiful white home with a white picket fence, you mm-hmm. know, like that's not the case there. Like, they're not building fences around their house, you know? Mm-hmm. They're a part of each other's communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, like, just Google it. Like, yeah. You will see that it yeah. is...
You will see the difference and the lack of the northern border being represented in Google.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, when we're criminalizing not just people, but now criminalizing geographical areas...
Mm-hmm.
and locations, etc., like
mm-hmm.
you're completely erasing these communities and erasing mm-hmm. their history and erasing the fact that they have fought for so long to have water in the fields,
mm-hmm.
to have access to clean bathrooms while you go to work. I couldn't help but feel like such a selfish, spoiled bitch the entire time I was down there. And it made me so mad.
Yeah.
And just, like, thinking of, like actually seeing, like, the sacrifices, like, our families made.
Mm-hmm. To give us this privilege that we have right now.
So, as we were kind of thinking of things to talk about within the border cities, the thing that came up was education. Mm-hmm. And, again, we tried doing research on it, but it wasn't very accessible, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I called my friend. Her name's Priscilla, who was a teacher and was teaching for a while, but still works for some of the school districts down there.
Mm-hmm.
And she's phenomenal. and she was just kind of sharing some of her thoughts in regards to this, like, idea of what people would envision a border city with and an education system.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to share some of that?
Yeah. So she shared of how, like, thriving the students are. And I can definitely see that, especially as you were talking about how, like, communal everything is. And if the programs are also bilingual, like, I just think that whole, like, wraparound, you know, context and idea really would help, like, the students strive, especially if you could relate to your teachers, if they understood, if your parents could connect to them, and then you could get the resources you needed in both, like, English or Spanish. You would just be able to access things more easily, and access is definitely one of the most important things to better education.
Exactly. And one of the things that they mentioned was when we were looking up stuff, we kept seeing things about, like, Mexican folks coming to the U.S. to have an education.
Mm-hmm.
And when I, you know, mentioned that, she was like, yeah, and they're some of the best students. Mm-hmm. They might not understand the language at the time, mm-hmm. but they're, like, very high achieving people.
Mm-hmm. And what I always remember, especially, or, like, when I was in school too, I forgot where I heard it, but it was that, like, intelligence shouldn't only be measured in English.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I just always try to keep that in mind when even, like, I forget, like, my English and be like, oh my gosh, because I can't process my ideas or thoughts, like, I mustn't be that, like,
you mustn't be that.
I'm trying to think of the word.
Well, another thing that she brought up was, like, the wealth gap isn't very large mm-hmm. in the Rio Grande Valley. So, like, you know, there isn't this idea of, like, all the rich kids go to this school, all the poor kids go here. Like, the mm-hmm. there's the wage gap is pretty similar throughout. Yeah. So everybody is getting a high quality education mm-hmm. and people are very invested in their education. And when we talk about, you know, how we find our liberation and this and that, like, a lot of people say education because mm-hmm. that's how we're able to get the better paying jobs, get mm-hmm. our families out of poverty, etc. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the communities here are super eager to mm-hmm. do well and succeed in higher ed, right?
Yeah
So that was, I think that was just, like, really fascinating to, like, touch up on, because it's really powerful to, like, unpack the fact that these communities are striving,
mm-hmm.
even though there's this narrative being thrown at them that they are, you know, dangerous. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And that's why we did this episode, was because it just wasn't what people say. Mm-hmm.
The narratives are totally contrary to what is actually happening. I think one of the last things we wanted to talk about was just the release mm-hmm. of migrants, especially down in that area. And I know you wanted to talk about how your friend also works there, and he's, like, really in the front lines and seeing all that, and how people are really just, like, kind of being thrown out there on their own.
Yeah, so the facilities in Texas, specifically in the border city areas, are just overflowing with people, and so they've had to release them. And mm-hmm. You know, folks need access to food and water mm-hmm. and clothing, shelter, etc. Yeah. Like, you can't just release, like, it's great that people were released and aren't being caged mm-hmm. in, like, packed in sardines in these facilities where there's thousands of them.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you just don't provide them with the resources mm-hmm. they need, like,
yeah,
that's just adds another layer, right? But mm-hmm. it's very clear that the community down there is ready to organize and be ready for those people in mm-hmm. their communities, because they are their communities. They see them as one.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, I guess we want to say, like, donate to those organizations. I know mm-hmm. that's the least that you could do in regards to everything that's happening, besides educating yeah. yourself, talking about it, going out of your way to, like, support these organizations. Mm-hmm. And the one that really comes to mind is Catholic Charities, after meeting Sister Norma
mm-hmm.
and being really inspired by not just the work she does, but just who she is as a person. Mm-hmm. So
please, if you can, donate. And I know you all hear this from, like, everywhere, but it really does, like, every little penny, you know, helps. If you can do, like, a dollar or two or whatever, that's a dollar that they didn't have before, and that can provide anything to any of the families down there. We'll probably put that somewhere in the show notes.
We'll link it down, yeah.
But yes, please.
I wanted to, I mean, there's a certain way that we need to end in regards to Caleb wants you to review our podcast so more people can find it and have access to please. It. So please do that and share it with your friends. Mm-hmm. We have some really cool stuff coming up. So keep up on our Instagram. It's really cool to just kind of build this and see what is coming mm-hmm. out of it. And next month we have amazing people coming on our show that so are just...
Stay tuned.
Yeah, so stay tuned because it's going to be phenomenal. And they're both from my fellowship, so I'm super excited, like, just for them to be here. Mm-hmm. And they're fucking badasses. Like, I can't even, like, express how excited I am to just have them on here. It's going to be an honor, and I hope you all enjoy it. But I kind of quickly wanted to end with just a quote that really resonated with a lot of us mm-hmm. when we were down there. And I think this really touches on nature and like just how beautiful like this land is mm-hmm. and how we're just separated by this border. Mm-hmm. So it says, the border says stop to the wind, but the wind speaks another language and keeps going. Alberto Rios. So like, to me that says that, like, you know, not just nature, but like our communities are so resilient and so mm-hmm. powerful, and regardless of all these barriers that keep us out or in or whatever, like mm-hmm. we're still able to keep going.
Yeah, we keep pushing forward.
If you have any questions or comments, please email us at ashotoftruthpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send us a nice tweet at @ShotOfTruthPodcast or look on Instagram for behind-the-scenes photos at @ShotOfTruthPodcast. You can also find us on Patreon and donate to our podcast at @ShotOfTruthPodcast. You can just assume it's all Shot of Truth Podcast. Podcast, podcast, podcast. A Shot of Truth Podcast, a Shot of Truth Podcast, a Shot of Truth Podcast.
This has been a Sound of Silence production.